How's it going, guys? What's up? Here is episode 7 of Storytime with Tofu. We're going to be talking about Arrow and the Flash today, more in depth, more of a recap this week of what's going on in the CW comic DC universe. Might touch on a little bit of Scandal near the end of this, but we're going to try and keep it short today because I'm still not feeling super great, and I don't want to be coughing in all of your ears while you're listening to this. So a lot of big developments on both series this week, actually. I feel like I think we're on episode 4 in each of them, and there are a lot of changes happening. So as you all know, Ronnie Raymond is dead in The Flash. So that means Dr. Stein is without his other half of Firestorm. So what this entire episode was basically about is them finding him a person, not only to become Firestorm again, but also because he's dying. And apparently his like molecular structure needs to fuse into Firestorm every like so often, otherwise he destabilizes or something, you know, some kind of trick like that. But Cisco made him some handy little glowy cane so he could walk around and stuff. But so I'm really happy with their choice. I will say it, I was wrong. They did not actually. I thought Ronnie was going to come back already, but I guess I'm glad they're waiting. And yep, I was also wrong in Arrow. Ray's not back, but he's revealing some secrets. So they're doing a good job of like carrying this along. But I thought since they resurrected Sarah so quickly in Arrow that, you know, they were going to dive right into this whole, oh yeah, by the way, in the spring, we might be launching a like 6 superhero crossover series called DC Legends of Tomorrow, which I'm still not sure if that's fall. I thought it had a spring release this year, but it might be fall of next year, and they could have just teased the shit out of us with this trailer. But anyway, so basically, The Flash is moving at a really, really great pace. And honestly, now that we know all of these side characters a lot better, I think the writers are doing a good job of giving them more in-depth stories. Now, if they're going to cross over extensively, I have no idea. But I'm really glad they're giving Iris material, mostly because her dad, Jesse L. Martin, played by Jesse L. Martin on the series, is such an incredible actor. And, you know, I said the first season, both him and Barry's father, who was in jail, added so much to the emotional scenes of the series, mostly because, you know, I think we kind of get a little sick of seeing teen or young actors on screen, you know, falling in love and falling in and out of love and dealing with their own problems. So when you kind of add this really father-like figure to the series, it brought the Flash to another level that Arrow doesn't really have, because, you know, Oliver's dad is dead, his mother is a bit corrupt, so, and I think it was more important for Barry's development to have, like, this, you know, consistent figure providing him good advice in the story, as well as, man, you know, those scenes get to you, you know, when you hear about, you know, Barry's childhood or, you know, the struggles growing up, like, you know, teary maybe. I don't know. I'm really soapy and sappy, so. So Iris's mom was brought back into the picture, and yes, I don't think this was planned. They're just like, oh, whatever happened to Iris's mom? It's like, oh, her dad kicked her out of the house and told Iris she died, so that conflict's been resolved. And the one that was added this season is, this episode was, she's straight up dying, and Iris still doesn't care because apparently she has a brother out there. Yeah, secret, full brother or half brother, we don't know. But that's the big, that was, believe it or not, other than Harrison Wells reappearing, which we'll get to, that was like the big cliffhanger in the last like 3 minutes of the episode. So, recap, Firestorm is back. They did a really good job. It kind of had a Smallville feel to the episode, I don't know, in terms of, you know, this kid was affected really negatively by the pulse blast, you know, Smallville was a meteor storm, but, like, now he has the chance to, like, prove himself, and definitely did the whole, like, don't believe what you see, you know, with your eyes kind of gimmick, because there were two candidates for the new Firestorm. One was, like, this ex-pro athlete who works at a garage. The other one was a nuclear physicist. And, of course, they're like, why wouldn't we choose the nuclear physicist? And, well, it turns out nuclear physicist is a psycho with anger problems. So there's always that. But the Flash is hitting a really steady pace. And I feel like it doesn't have to, because of the procedural isn't the right word because there's tons of subplot, but because of the more, I want to say, Smallville-like feel, it's like there was a big event, the emanations of, not emanations, the cause of that event has created people with a ton of superpowers, and we're trying to control that while Barry is learning how to become the Flash kind of thing. Like, it's a lot more basic, where because, you know, Star City, Oliver, you know, doesn't have powers, he's basically Batman, they're... I feel like it's harder for them to make, you know, the city feel in danger, the stakes higher. So the Flash just doesn't run into those problems because, you know, he's can run ridiculously fast and everyone around him kind of has superpowers. But more importantly, I'm really, really glad Harrison Wells is back. So this is not... So, okay, recap. Original Harrison Wells died a long time ago. And was, like, cloned and replaced by Hubert Thawne, the evil Flash from the future who, like, was stuck in the past after fighting future Barry, and they went back in time, et cetera, et cetera. So Hubert Thawne, Harrison Wells, who was the Harrison Wells in the first season, is officially dead. Okay, official is the wrong word, because it's the CW universe, and as Greg Berlotti said, no one is ever officially dead. Yep, and I have no problem with that. But... So this Harrison Wells, being played by the same actor, is from Earth 2, where Jay Garrick, Earth 2's Flash, is from. And the kind of overarching villain of this season, it seems, is Zoom, which is the reverse Flash from that universe. So I'm really excited to see where that goes, because mostly because that, again, a more veteran actor, and I'm going to look up his name right now while I talk about him, added so much to that series. I remember his speech about what it's like to touch the Speed Force, and I'm just like, God, okay, you know, you got your acting chops, and okay, I'm going to find this actor because I know him from a lot of things. Tom Cavanaugh. God, I'm so sorry. Tom Cavanaugh. He's JD's older brother in Scrubs, and he's kind of known, I think, for more goofy roles, but he's great in this. He's really good, and I'm glad to see that he's not confined to a wheelchair anymore, like season one. So there's a lot of exciting stuff happening there. Again, focusing on the side plots, I know that, like, I feel TV shows have been pressured to add more side plot for the side characters, purely because, you know, I think at times it gets tedious to fill 22 45-minute episodes of television with just shit about your main character. But they're doing a really good job. I'm glad there's not a snippet of it in every episode. There's, like, they're dedicating, you know, larger parts of an episode to that type of arc, especially, like, or specifically revolving around Cisco's powers. Cisco, I think the quote was, Dr. Wells said... You can sense the vibrations of the universe, bro. Okay, he didn't say bro, but yeah. So far, all we've seen this season is he just really dislikes his powers. But, I mean, it's clearly going to be incredibly important because if he can hear the vibrations of the universe, he can hear the vibrations from all universes. And clearly Earth 2 is in another dimension, aka another universe, and there's going to be some kind of crossover. But... You know, I'm glad they didn't dive right into it. I think we're going to see more of this next episode. But I guarantee you, it probably will not be until mid-season finale where Cisco, like, probably truly embraces these powers. But again, I've been wrong. I clearly was wrong last week. So, you know, bear with me. But what I will be interested to see, and quick stepping over to CBS here, is Supergirl did an incredible job of not focusing too hard on its side characters. Something that Smallville, which I'm going to compare it to, struggled with on the CW near the later seasons, and it just became really, really complicated, but still really uninteresting. So if Supergirl on CBS can keep this more mainstream procedural-esque formula, you're solely focused on, you know, most of the scenes your main character is going to be in, and, you know, the supporting characters truly do feel like supporting characters. But again, that's going to work for that network. You know, The Flash is doing something else, and they're doing it well. So again, I'm as much as that sounded like complaining, I'm saying they're doing it very, very well. Other than that, I'm mostly curious to see more crossovers in terms of powers between between the Flash and Arrow, and most importantly, how magic is potentially going to seep its way into the Flash universe. Because clearly in the Arrow universe, they're throwing around the term metahuman. And like, I'm pretty sure two episodes ago, there was someone said like, yeah, we can use that term now. It's fine. It's accepted. Because that clearly was something the creators were unsure about for the first two seasons of that show. And then it's like, no, we're building a universe. It's fine. So that's clearly there. What I don't necessarily see yet is the elements of magic from this new DC universe coming in. Again, stepping headfirst into it in the Arrow universe. I mean, in the Arrow series, but again, same universe. So I'm kind of more curious to see how, you know, Cisco, Caitlin, and Barry end up dealing with a villain who shows up in Central City wielding magic powers or something like that. Damian Dark clearly can use magic. I love how he says it, and I love how he just intimidates people with it. It's like, you know, my colleagues say this is a parlor trick. It's like, I'm telling you. And it's like, oh, now you're dead. It's clearly not. Some kind of blood magic, I think. But he's, again, don't forget, original member of League of Shadows. So that's not to easily forgotten. But yeah, last things about The Flash. I think next episode we're going to get a lot more of Earth 2. I hope Jay Garrick may show up again. But most importantly, I really just want to know who Zoom is, because I don't want to do any side research on him till I get a better idea of what, you know, where they're going with him, because then I can kind of connect that better, do some research on that. So maybe after next week's episode, I'll do a little more research and I'll give you some side info on that. But other than that, Flash is season one. All of my expectations, maybe a little bit more, and they've been staying on that golden streak this entire season as well. And, you know, last episode, huge, huge acting chops to Jesse L. Martin. I have to say it again, because every scene he's in, he just brings another 100% of emotional feel to the scene. That, you know, Grant Gustin's great, but, like, Jesse L. Martin, I feel like, is the like side catalyst to help, you know, make the scene whole, you know, and give it a little extra on top. And it's kind of unfortunate that now that just gearing over to Arrow here, it's kind of unfortunate that Moira Queen is dead, because she's a veteran TV actress, and I think she does a lot of side theater. Her character is dead, the actress is not. But since she's been gone, I've felt a lack of that. And no offense to Detective Lance, who's also very good at times. I'm not sure if it's his accent, but it always kind of feels like he's trying too hard in certain scenes. Paul Blackthorne is the actor's name. And I just, it's to the point where whenever Laurel and her dad are on the screen, I just don't care as much compared to when, like, Emily and Oliver, Stephen Amell and, like, Emily Bette Ricard are on screen, or even David Ramsey, who plays John Diggle. I don't know, something is very off-putting about Paul Blackthorne in this series, but, I mean, he serves a purpose, and I guess he's supposed to be very antagonistic towards Oliver Queen's character, so. But I'm glad there's been some recent reconciliation there. What I'm very, very proud of this season is I felt that last season, although I enjoyed it, there was a lot of sloppiness between, you know, Colton Haynes' character, the Red Arrow, Roy Harper fighting, and then they, you know, they added Thea and John, and then, you know, Laurel's becoming, the new Black Canary. The fighting scene, and maybe it was on purpose, felt a little more rough, less precision then. And they've done a really good job this season of, you know, Diggle's wearing a mask now. It all feels very coordinated, and it does feel really kind of like Saturday morning badassery. So I've really been enjoying that. Again, that's why the show has such a different feel from The Flash. Mostly because, you know, not superpowers. You're kind of, like, again, it's supposed to be you're rooting for Batman again. That's why that's why, you know, The Flash, again, Superman, Oliver Queen, Green Arrow is Batman. And Batman occasionally deals with metahumans and magic. So in the Arrow universe, what I'm going to talk about first is not exactly what happened in the episode, but what's going to be announced for next week. It is they finally showed the trailer. It is going to be the actor who played John Constantine on the NBC Constantine series. He is also the voice of Edward Kenway in Assassin's Creed Black Flag. What is that actor's name? I believe it's Matt Ryan. He's a Welsh actor, and I love how every time someone asks him if he's British in the NBC Constantine series, he would reply, "I'm Welsh." He's a great character. I don't know why that series got canceled. There are so many worse shows on NBC that came out that year, but I don't know. Ratings matter more on these networks than I understand. And I mean, it wasn't like mind-blowingly good enough to like perhaps keep. But again, Heroes Reborn is just fucking awful right now. So I would rather be watching Constantine. I thought the acting was better too. But anyway, so hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more of him. And I think he might be playing a more side character role in DC Legends of Tomorrow. But, you know, Oliver Queen clearly has, and I think we're going to see in this kind of pass on the island, a closer step into his world looking at magic, I think, because he said he's seen something like this before. So far, you know, the island story is moving very slowly, but again, they do a really good job of timing it with the episodes. I think the only time it felt disjointed was maybe season 2. But, you know, season 3 was fine, and season 1 was actually, that was the thing they did really well, the back and forth between the island and the other land. Yeah, okay, I know why season 2 was kind of rough on the island. It's because they had the whole Sarah stuck in the boat with Dr. Ivo plotline. But I won't talk too much about that, mostly because, you know, that was 2 years ago. But anyway, so again, this element of magic has constantly been popping up, and I'm really curious. Okay, so I like to think Batman has Zatanna in his universe. He like would always go to her for consultations. Of course, you know, in the TV show, after a certain amount of episodes, I believe he acquired enough like data in his computer base, in his computer / like magical artifacts whenever like someone showed up to deal with that. But still, so Constantine is going to come and talk about Sarah, but I don't know if like who's bringing him in, because I don't think he and Oliver are acquainted. So I'm more curious to see if they're going to introduce another side character, because this show needs anymore who's like more familiar with magic in order to take down Damian Dark. Because after the, you know, they really built up the how much stronger Ra's al Ghul was than Oliver in the last 2 seasons. So I don't know, and Damian Dark is supposed to be even crazier, so I don't think they're just gonna have him die. I get it. Okay, I think I figured it out. Someone else is gonna die. That's my prediction. You heard it right here. Instead of having Oliver almost die or get mutilated or something at the mid-season finale, someone on the team is gonna die. And I think I really hope it's not Felicity, but I think it might be Felicity. I don't know. I jinxed it. I don't want to say it. Okay, but that's my prediction. Someone on Team Arrow has to die, and nothing is going to happen. And this is not end of the season. This is mid-season, so around probably episode 10 or 11. Okay, so after that, let's talk about Hive. I've never been a huge fan of like abbreviations like that, but so far I'm very, very confused as to Hive's role in this organization, because I suppose Damian Dark represents Hive, but he can't be the head of Hive, so that means there's someone more powerful in charge of Hive that is gonna show up. And because I know nothing about I haven't read too many of those comics, I literally have no idea who it could be. I feel like they've teased out a lot of heroes in The Flash already, and they've already teased out a lot of heroes in Arrow, so I'm wondering if they're going to start recycling villains, maybe? I don't know. Maybe not. It's all very complicated. I did not think I was going to get this tongue-tied about where these two series are going to meet in their universes, but there seem to be diverging in very, very different directions, despite like being in the same, supposedly in the same continuity. So, let me be honest. I want the Arrow Flash crossover episode at least 2 weeks from now, because that always is really funny. It's always really entertaining, like watching Barry get shot by arrows, and Oliver's like, you'll just be fine. Like, you have a healing factor, but this is why you should always observe before you go into a scene. It's like, oh my god, the contrast between these two series sometimes is also fucking astounding. But anyway, a lot of great stuff this week from both of them, all hitting their marks. And I promise you, I am going to be honest when it starts to drag on. And it does at times happen in the middle of the seasons. You get a really poor, weak episode. But so far, they've all been fairly well done. Not fairly. They all have been very well done. Clearly, the CW is trusting Greg Berlanti to continue doing what he does best. And I thank him for it. We're going to end in about 5 minutes here. So I'm going to just talk a little bit more about Supergirl. Again, let's go back and comparing it to Smallville, as well as comparing it to the other skew of a CBS series. The very popular, easy-to-watch CBS non-comedy series, and I'm talking about like Two and a Half Men, Big Bang Theory as their leading comedy series, are definitely the NCISs, okay? Because there's now an NCIS, I think, in like 4 cities. There's like NCIS, NCIS LA, NCIS New Orleans, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be an NCIS Chicago. Forget the countless amounts of NCIS. There's probably like one in every single friggin' country now, because that show is really, really popular. And it is really, really easy to watch, mostly because every single character is like almost assaultingly charming. I just kind of got sick of the same old, which, you know, was its downfall for me. But like, you know, it's the same reason why you go back and watch Castle with Nathan Fillion. You know, he's incredibly charming, and you're not watching this to be entertained and like mind blown in the same way you're watching Fargo. You're watching it because it absorbs easy, and you really like watching Nathan Fillion and Kate Beckett. Sorry, I should learn. Astana Kotick is the actress's name. Excuse me. Kate Beckett is the woman we love on the series. Beckett. Anyway, Supergirl carries that principle on incredibly well. Both Arrow and The Flash are easy to watch shows in comparison to Fargo or, you know, anything on HBO like that. But they do try to create a higher, how do I want to put this? They are trying to create the feel that it is kind of a more serious, higher echelon of television, you know, with the occasional like witty jokes and like very self-aware jokes. But you can tell that feel mostly by the scoring and the way the cuts are done. It still follows the television standard television pattern of you have a certain amount of beats you want to hit in an episode, so your audience feels, you know, goes through a very specific journey, a timed journey. However, again, as I was saying, I've only seen one episode of Supergirl, so we'll see how it goes. But it seems like they're going to keep this series very streamlined, very neat, very like, this is our character. We're going to watch her grow from a bubbly, like, kind of not super outgoing or confident, young woman into, like, a superhero who saves the world, who's living up to the legacy of not the S on her chest, but the symbol of House L. Oh, sorry, excuse me. The House of L. She makes a good point of saying that in the series. I got thumbs up for me because people forget that. And it's easy to forget that because Superman was a child and that symbol was just on him. And it's like, oh, it looks like an S. And it probably started that way. I think in the early comic books, I'm not exactly sure, but the original Superman, I don't believe, was exactly an alien. That'll be my job. After next series, I'll look up some more comic history on both Supergirl and Superman. But they keep the story streamlined. They're going to keep it incredibly procedural. And I don't think they're going to give, as I said before, her side characters a really deep slash incredible amount of side plot. That's not to say they're not going to get the episode where, oh, this is not going to be super focused on Kara. We're going to learn more about, you know, her sister Carol Danvers. However, like, she's going to be the direct plot line for that entire episode versus, like, oh, Kara's doing this and, you know, she's on the side dealing with her own issues. No, like, the two are going to be completely joined together because that's how you keep the streamlined television going. That's how you keep a lighter, more procedural feel to a show like this. So, props to it. Did a great job. It charmed the life out of me. And major apologies to Melissa Benoist because I thought she was not going to do a good job because I was expecting like this more harder, cocky Supergirl that I'm more used to probably from Justice League, Justice League Unlimited. She proved that she did not need to do that. She charmed America with her smile, definitely her hair. Her hair is like awesome in this, and like when it's up and like nerdy, when it's down and going, they did a perfect job. Screw the bangs from Glee. I'm glad they're gone. Anyway, props to her. Props to Greg Berlanti for not making this part of his universe, I guess. I don't know if that was his decision or CBS's. And let's keep watching the ride from here. Stay tuned, guys. Next week, Monday, we'll reconvene our discussion about The Nick, Fargo, and The Leftovers. I saw a couple movies this week, so maybe I'll throw in a quick discussion about those. But as always, appreciate you listening. Keep watching TV. It is one of the coolest things in the world. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend, and happy Halloween!